When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to the Boiler Alert Podcast. With you, as always, I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Ryan Bonaparte.
We're here, again, home of the 1-1 Purdue Boilermakers, here to look ahead to the next game this Saturday against the Syracuse Orange, taking place in Ross-Ade Stadium at 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. Ryan, are you excited for a night game at the brand-new Ross-Ade Stadium?
Aren't I always?
I mean, I suppose that is true, that you likely always are excited for that type of game. Obviously, you're going to be in attendance with this one. You're going to be watching in the press box. Apart from, you know, anything about Syracuse or the Purdue game itself, is there anything atmosphere-wise you're looking forward to? Because I imagine it'll be a little bit different with the team coming out of the tunnel. I assume there's going to be a lighting situation. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm kind of excited to see that. What about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, I know there were some issues with the video board last home game. So hopefully we'll get to see the AV department work at full strength, and I'm assuming that includes the lighting situation. So possibly a nice show going to be coming to Ross-Ade on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And as someone who, again, if you've listened to this podcast for very long, you know this, I have a 3-year-old, so I'm very excited that kickoff is at 7:30 because he goes to bed at 8. So I do not have to worry about not having the TV on because we don't want him watching too much TV, or, you know, not having the sound on so that he doesn't pay attention to it, or anything of having to catch up too much. So I'll be setting the DVR, so I'll be about half an hour behind, but with the number of commercials and different breaks in college football, I should be caught up in plenty of time. So very excited about that. Also, this game is on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the whole brand new rights package for the Big Ten. You know, NBC usually the home of only Notre Dame football, so it'll be interesting to see Purdue on NBC, not against Notre Dame, of course, the former employer of Drew Brees before that whole thing didn't work out. But no hard feelings to NBC, but I'm really looking forward to see what they can do for a primetime college football game.
Absolutely, and I'm assuming their app is going to work incredibly well as compared to the ESPN app.
Oh yeah, I can't believe we didn't mention this in the last episode, but the ESPN app, the Watch ESPN app, absolutely terrible. Really hard to find your game. Say again?
Wasn't worth mentioning.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, absolutely terrible. Hard to find your game. Didn't always play. Took long chunks of not working. It's so sad because they have such an opportunity to have a really good app and people would really use it because they have so much live sports content, but they just absolutely have blown it with that app. And it's been terrible for years, but we don't have a choice. We have to use it. So maybe the joke's on all of us.
Right. Absolutely. So, times are changing, so we'll see, hopefully some good football if you're not attending the game, and hopefully you'll be able to see it.
Yeah. So, as we said, 7:30 NBC. This is a sellout, complete sellout for this game, and the new capacity for those that had not seen this, it's 61,441 with the new Ross-Ade seating in the student section and the addition of the second tunnel. So that is our new capacity. That is the number of tickets sold for this one. Now, going on to Syracuse. In the second half of the pod, we're going to have some folks on from a Syracuse podcast that is also part of the Fans First Sports Network. But for now, Ryan and I are going to give you a little bit out of what Syracuse has done so far this year. They are currently 2-0 on the year, so one better than Purdue. But Ryan, tell me why that doesn't matter as much as the numbers, you know, 2-0 say. Why does that not matter as much?
Yeah, well, the most important thing is in week one, Syracuse got to absolutely annihilate Toothpaste University in Colgate. And then in week two, they also laid down the wood against a MAC team. However, it was Western Michigan who at right now, if you go by analytics, if you're one of those people, they are a bottom four MAC team. So not exactly the highest level of competition for Syracuse, and this will be by far the best team they have faced so far this year.
Yeah, and they have, I mean, in fairness, you know, we're going to dog on the competition, and that's fine. In the first game, they won 65-0. Second game, they won 48-7. So they have scored 113 points in just two games. So, you know, that's obviously undeniably good. You can't take anything away from the fact that they've been able to put points on the board. But again, as Ryan said, Colgate and Western Michigan, not exactly, you know, the murderer's row of college football schedules. So what do we know about Syracuse that we didn't maybe know when we did our offseason look at them? I mean, what have we learned about Syracuse as a team so far this year?
Yeah, so their quarterback is still pretty good in Garrett Schrader. He's thrown for over 500 yards in two games, five touchdowns, an interception. He's ran for 70 yards and another touchdown, so he's versatile. Syracuse so far, they have scored in bunches. I mean, you said it. And it's really their passing game that seems to be doing the brunt of their work. I say that, but it's very well spread. So their rushing attack, they have three different guys who have 17 or more carries, and LaQuint Allen, Ike Daniels, and Juwan Price. So between the three of them, they have nearly 300 rushing yards, and it's a balanced attack. They have several receivers with over five receptions, counting, I believe it is five of them. So Garrett Schrader has his options at quarterback, and that's not exactly what you want to see if you're Purdue's secondary, which has a tendency to struggle. So we kind of hoped that Purdue could lock down, you know, the main source and kind of bracket a guy, but that may not be the play this week. So it's could be a struggle, but as we said, this was against far inferior competition.
Yeah, so I had the chance to send some questions over to the Syracuse SB Nation representative, and they were nice enough to send me their answers. And I asked them, you know, what unit on each side of the ball worries you the most? And the one they mentioned on offense, I think, plays really well into a strength of Purdue's defense, and that is their offensive line. They said, and I'm going to quote here, "The Orange offensive line has struggled massively this season. The pocket seems to collapse on every single play. If Schrader was not as mobile as he is, he would have way more than the one sack he's taken so far this season," end quote. So they've lost, it looks like, three presumed starters from their offensive line, and that gives me hope that Purdue, whose defensive line has looked relatively good so far this year, would be able to get into the backfield and cause some problems and maybe, you know, take away some of the pressure on that secondary with the excellent passing attack that Syracuse has. So that is my biggest hope from the kind of Purdue defense versus the Syracuse offense perspective.
Yeah, I like that. Especially with, you saw it, the Purdue defensive line is quick. Not necessarily as as powerful as you'd like them to be, but they are quick and can get back into the backfield. If Nick Scorton and Kydren Jenkins can have a field day, this is a different game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of the matchup that I would like to see exploited the most. But that's easier said than done, especially I believe you were talking about them potentially getting some offensive linemen back.
Yeah.
And the starting squad. So we all know at Purdue how effective that can be, getting a starting or even backup offensive lineman back. So that's always a variable, but I like the defensive line's chances.
Yeah, I do too. So, you know, obviously the Syracuse game last year, we've talked about it. It was just an absolute, you know, cluster F at the end of the game. Purdue mm-hmm. taking the lead with 41 seconds, the two penalties, giving Syracuse the ball at the 50-yard line, handing the game to Syracuse, basically. And so, given all that and how closely matched these two teams were last year, I was very, very surprised to see the answers from this guy from the SB Nation Syracuse site. Basically, he thinks Purdue is going to get run over. He picked Syracuse to win by 18 points. 18 points. Keep in mind, if you go online and look at various betting places right now, it is around 2.5 or 3 points is the spread. And this guy's picking Syracuse to take down Purdue by 18. He picked 34-16, so they're going to more than double Purdue up on the scoreboard. And whether you think Purdue is going to win or Purdue is going to lose, I find that prediction a little bit outrageous.
Yeah, especially at Ross-Ade Stadium.
Yeah, at Ross-Ade at night, too.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, we all know that picking the final score is not the easiest of things.
But no.
We like to think we can lock in within a little bit closer than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that just seems, you know, we talk about how you and I are homers and how we pick with rose-colored glasses, but man, that guy might be looking straight through a big glass of orange juice. So I don't know what he's got going on there.
He's got that Trop 50 on his table.
Yeah, Trop 50 there. Right. He's worried about his figure. He's getting the low-calorie one. Which, right. By the way, not near as good as the regular Tropicana. I mean, let's just admit it.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, for sure. So, kind of looking at this team, we know that we talked about players beforehand, and the thing I kind of want to touch base on is kind of the extra. So, looking at, you know, how are they doing on third down? Mm-hmm. How are their penalties?
Yeah, that's good stuff. That kind of stuff.
So, kind of bring it full circle, you know, an orange is
a circle. I was going to say, is that because they're the orange?
Yeah, exactly. So, we've talked a lot about third down conversions, right, over the past two games. And one was very good for Purdue. One was not so good for Purdue.
You can say it was very bad. It was very bad.
Right. So we've hit sort of our level. And Syracuse is 17-31 on third down. So right about that middle line.
Right.
So, of course, you know, water's going to find its level. And the other thing that kind of strikes me as interesting is Syracuse, so far in the season, has 16 penalties against them.
Wow. Obviously I'm doing quick math here, but that's 8 a game. That is a lot.
Yes. So we will see how this goes. I know it got chippy at the end of the game last season. And both teams obviously had penalties on them, but for Purdue, they were some crippling penalties, of course. I like to think that the Ryan Walters team so far is disciplined in that area. So
yeah,
I am encouraged.
My hope is that we can't possibly be less disciplined than Jeff Brohm's teams often were.
Right.
And we talked about last year, you know, I don't know if that was a reflection of the way Jeff Brohm coached or whether that was just a fluke thing, but man, that team last year had so many unsportsmanlike penalties.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something to look forward to, or to look not forward to, is the absence of penalties on Purdue. We'll find out.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you mentioned right before we started recording, I think you said something that was pretty interesting to me. You said they had fumbled a number of times this year. Not necessarily lost them all, but they'd fumbled a number of times. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, they've actually fumbled 5 times this season. Now, they've lost only 2 of those. However, I mean, 5 fumbles, you got to keep a better handle on them.
Yeah, I mean, in just 2 games.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that I'm kind of interested at is they have actually returned 2 interceptions for touchdowns.
That's impressive.
So their defense definitely looks to score the ball. So there's always that. But if you're listening at home and you have your scorecard, Hudson Card is yet to throw an interception. So if he doesn't throw one, they can't return one. I'm knocking on my wood desk as we speak.
I'm in a lazy boy chair, and it does have a wood, wood arms and wood base. So I will go ahead and knock on that for us. But now you heard it here, listeners. If Hudson Card throws an interception on Saturday, we know exactly who to blame.
Yeah, I think that is fair.
Okay, good, so. Good. Because fair or not, it's what's going to happen.
Right.
So do we know anything? I know Purdue has released their depth chart for this game. Do we have anybody coming back? Do we have anybody unexpectedly out? Obviously, this is going to change on Saturday. They release a final injury report. But where do we stand right now with guys who have been out so far this season?
As far as I know, the 2 players who are most likely to come back and play are Gus Hartwig, who that would be a big plus for the offensive line. I mean, Josh Kaltenberger did fine on last week, but Gus is just another animal. And then the other player is Garrett Miller. Now, he didn't play beyond the first series in the Virginia Tech game, but having him back will also be a big plus. So this is all based on how their rehab has been going, and it's sort of, best case scenario. Ryan Walther still has not said whether or not Hartwig will play this week, even though, if he's back, he will start. So we're hoping that those are the 2 big returnees.
Yeah, yeah, and I went through the Ryan Walther's press conference that he held on Monday. And after they released the depth chart, Gus Hartwig was atop the depth chart at the center position. And when asked if this meant Hartwig was going to play, Walther said, and I quote, "I don't know if he will play or not on Saturday. We've got to trust the docs and trust where he's at in the rehab process. But I can guarantee you when he's ready to play, he's going to play," end quote. So while that is a bit of coach speak, we didn't really get much of an answer there. I think the fact that they put him back atop the depth chart speaks volumes to what they hope will happen on Saturday. Obviously, things could change. He could tweak something, or he could feel not ready. But that, to me, says they are very hopeful that he can come back and get on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an extra 6.5 hours to heal.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No noon game. We're starting at 7:30, so plenty of time to get out there. So. Anybody else on Syracuse you want to mention or highlight before we bring in the folks who know Syracuse way better than we do?
Yeah, I believe the player who shall not be named from last year, I mean, we're going to name him, but he put the fork in Purdue last season, Gadsden. I believe he was hurt, and he might be out for this game.
Okay. We'll have to confirm that with our friends here shortly. Mm-hmm. But that would obviously be good news for Purdue. We're not advocating for injuries. We hope he's fine in the long run, but just not on Saturday.
Right.
So anybody else? Otherwise, we're going to take our break and talk to some folks from Syracuse.
Nope, I think that's it.
All right, sounds good. We will catch you folks after the break.
I ask anybody's question but yours. You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Disloyal Idiots, a Fans for Sports Network podcast. With you, as always, Steve Haler and Christian DeGuzman. No Andy Pregler because, well, he's on a milk carton somewhere again. Joining us for this special edition are Andrew Ledman and Ryan Bonaparte from Boiler Alert, the Fans for Sportsnet Purdue podcast for all things Syracuse versus Purdue this weekend. How are we doing, guys?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Yep.
I'm thankful that Syracuse plays under a roof and doesn't have to deal with too many elements.
Yeah. You know, well, 5.5 hour delay in your week two game really is not something you plan for, but it worked out for Purdue with that win over Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that's we actually had something similar up here on the other side of football last night. Syracuse hosted Siena for a men's soccer match that got called in the 53rd minute because literally they were, every time they took a step, they were splashing.
Oh my.
Yeah, it was, I was watching the video feed of it and I was like, this is not humanly right. Like, you should not be running in these conditions. So yeah, fun
soccer
times.
Polo.
What's that?
Do it like polo. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go. It basically could have been last night. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got that for anyone who is randomly seeing either of these feeds and living under a rock. Syracuse will be traveling to West Lafayette, Indiana to play Purdue at 8 o'clock, or is it a 7:30 kick?
7:30.
Okay. I'll be in Disneyland, so it won't matter to me, but, everybody else will be, watching at 7:30. So yeah, ACC to Big Ten and, rematch of last year. I don't know where anybody wants to start it off, but feel free.
Let's talk about last year first, because
do we have to?
Well, I won't get into why Purdue lost because you guys can better articulate that.
Penalties. Say, I can tell you why.
Yes, that was a big reason. But Andrew and I were talking a little bit before this. That game was weird.
We specialize in weird games here at Syracuse for the record.
Yeah.
And as much as I think a lot of people on the internet had loved that game last year at Sicko's Committee, I don't necessarily want that again this year for both of our sanities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely not. So, Steve, you said you're going to be in Disney for this game. Last year, during the Purdue Syracuse game, I was at Sesame Place with my son. So, I'd recorded the game, but I was also getting alerts on my phone. So, I see Syracuse is in the lead, Purdue's in the lead, Syracuse is in the lead. And then I see Purdue takes the lead with 41 seconds left, and I'm like, all right, it's over, it's over. And then I, like, kind of put my phone away, and we're, like, hanging with Elmo or Grover or something. I don't even remember. And then I get a bunch of messages all at once, like text messages, GroupMe, WhatsApp, Twitter, ESPN alert, and I'm like, what is going on? And I look at my phone, and I'm like, what happened? So, of course, I had to dig into, like, what went on. And then the two penalties after the Purdue touchdown and kicking off, and you guys get the ball at the 50. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And then when I watched it, it was even worse.
Oh, yeah. And this is the game that both teams were completely allergic to the end zone in the first three quarters.
Yeah.
And then decided to wake up for a ridiculous fourth quarter that turned into that stupidity at the end. I think all of us as Syracuse fans can also say we did not deserve to win that game. Purdue probably didn't deserve to win that game. I think that if the dome roof had collapsed, that probably would have been the fitting end to that that debacle.
What that game needed was a 5.5 hour rain delay that ultimately decided that the game would end in a no contest.
Yeah.
So it
would have been better for everybody.
But alas, the internet won, because how many times have you seen Circus Committee use that gif of the girl that says this is so effing stupid and pans down to the guy just going woo?
Yep.
The internet is undefeated. You know, you can't beat the internet. So I don't blame you there.
Very true.
And the best part about this is that this is a primetime game this year on mainstream cable NBC.
NBC, baby.
Somebody
home
saw
of,
that.
Home of Notre Dame.
Yeah, that seems to be the only time we get NBC games. But for some reason, people saw that matchup last year and were like, you know what? We need to show the world this.
Yeah. Yeah, more people should see this game, and it should represent the best of both the Big Ten and the ACC.
Right. Yeah, is there some secret like SEC folks on the board at NBC saying, you know what, let's grab these and make us look even better?
Could be.
Or they just wanted to give Noah Eagle an interesting game.
There you go.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I have a question for you guys.
Fire away.
So I asked, because Ryan and I also write for the SB Nation site for Purdue, and we traded questions with the Syracuse representative, and that was you?
Yeah.
That was me.
And
It was me last year.
You were so confident about this game. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, this is a stretch for people who are used to my content on our site, on News Tradition, because I'm usually the pessimist on our site.
So what's going on? 18-point victory.
Yeah, we'll get to why I said what my final score is, because, yes, I did go for a bit of a stretch. The big thing is defense. I'm absolutely in love with this defense, and a lot of people are coming to terms with one of the trendiest defenses in the college football landscape, and that's the 3-3-5. If you watched any of the college football playoff last year, that's the defense that TCU ran. And you'll see it actually in the Big Ten later this year when you guys play Nebraska, because Syracuse's DC last year, Tony White, is now Nebraska's DC. And Nebraska's defense isn't Nebraska's problem. It's their offense.
I was going to say it's the rest of Nebraska.
Yes, Nebraska does have a lot of problems. Well, you guys can dive into that when you guys eventually play them. So, of course, when Syracuse lost Tony White to Nebraska, a lot of people are asking, okay, who's going to be the next guy that Dino Babers brings in to take over and become the DC? Well, it turns out he brings in Rocky Long, the guy who actually invented the system in the first place. And what we've seen from the first two games, yes, it's against much lesser competition, against FCS Colgate and
That was going to be my rebuttal to you.
Yes,
yeah.
It's against much lesser competition against FCS Colgate and bottom of the barrel MAC Western Michigan. However, this is a defense that, even given those opponents, it's a defense that looks faster and more aggressive, and more in tune, more fundamental than the Syracuse 3-3-5 under Tony White. It's because you have the guy who literally invented a defense teaching the defenders who already have a pretty good grasp on what they need to do. And back when the 3-3-5 was initially introduced to Syracuse, you have defenders all the time saying how much they love the system, how much freedom they had in terms of just flying to the ball and playing with basically their ears tucked to their back and just going after ball carriers. And it's a reason why you've seen so many Syracuse defenders drafted, starting safety for the Jaguars. Andre Sisco, you know, famously honed his craft in this system. You got Derek Williams and Ifeatu Melifonwu, both quarterbacks who got drafted in the third round and honed their craft in this system. And so it's a defense that has grown more in more ways than I thought than its previous predecessor and from Tony White. And I think that's why I think this defense is something to be reckoned with.
And you can mark this clip and you can pull it out if Purdue gets absolutely dominated. But, you know, you can play it in your next episode and that's fine. I'll take the L. But I'll just say, you know, I think any defense will look good against that level of competition if they're competent. I mean, your defense should look competent against, you know, Colgate. It's like when Purdue last year played Indiana State, and it was like 55-0. We had just absolutely dominated them, but you can't really take anything from that. It's like putting Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie Kindergarten Cop. Is he a giant or is he facing kindergartners? No one really knows. We'll have to find out later. When he faces the real villain. So I would just say it's a little too early for me to say anybody's defense is really that good yet.
Now, for the record, Christian is part of the thing is we're Syracuse and we're not used to actually looking competent against those teams.
And Christian, I apologize. I did not recognize your name. I just scanned right through that email. Yeah. So sorry.
I will say, and one of the things I did mention that the Hammer and Rails readers will be able to see in the Q&A is that there is one weakness to his defense, and we're not sure how it's going to fare out. It's going to be their run defense, and that's one of the ways that Purdue could maybe squibble their way against their defense, against the Syracuse defense. It's if Devin Mockaby has a good game. Because last year, the reason why Syracuse lost a ton of games last year towards the end after going 6-0 to start the season was run defense. And you saw guys from Notre Dame who were under 100-yard rushers having near 200 yards against Syracuse. And
it wasn't good.
The run defense just in general last year towards the end of this season was not good. And we're still not sure, again, because the level of competition hasn't been great, we're still not sure if those problems have been fixed. Yes, the Orange did a great job stopping the run last year against Purdue. Who knows if that's going to hold up again?
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question because, like you said, last season Purdue could not get anything going on the ground in this game. But this was really before the Devin Mockaby show got fully in tune. So we've kind of figured out we have a budding star on our team, and I think we would like to start to realize that we can utilize him and scheme around Devin Mockaby a little bit more. So obviously that may present a new challenge for the Syracuse defense this season.
Steve, it sounds like Purdue and Syracuse have a similar problem.
Yes, 100%. Well, no, is their problem their offensive line is a pile of hot garbage sometimes, or is that just a
sometimes
problem?
Yeah. Okay. And in week one, we played a fifth string center.
Oh, we know how to do that. That was 2 years ago.
That would, I mean, and I said in the questions, Christian, you sent me, I was like, you don't really ever have a fifth string center.
No.
You know, it's not on the depth chart. It's just, it's like, it's a lineman who knows how to snap the ball.
And or half the time, it's not even that. As a former as a former college center, it's like,
your fifth string center is your third string long snapper.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
It's, as the it's former like a long guy snapper, who, too.
It's a guy who went over on the sideline and they're like, hey, you're the center now.
Yep.
Come talk to Hudson Card and snap a couple times and then you're in.
And hope they don't fumble it. Yeah, we were down 2 years ago. I think we were down to our third string and we were in kind of a pistol formation and it did not work well for anybody involved in any way, shape, or form.
I was amazed it worked for Purdue as well as it did. Like there were no really bad errant snaps. There was no like horrible miscommunication between the center and the quarterback, but the fifth string guy wasn't out there too terribly long before the fourth string guy came back. But still, you know, it's not great.
Yeah. So Syracuse is dealing with some injuries up front. Christian, I can assume you were just waiting for the point where offensive line talk happened. It's inevitable on our podcast that I go into some weird diatribe about the offensive line every week, but, for your guys' sake, we do have some injuries up front that are hopefully recovering. So what we've seen for the first 2 weeks hasn't been what should be our number one offensive line. We did lose our starting right tackle last game, but then we'll likely be getting our starting guard and other starting guard back. So it's going to be weird up front. I don't know what Purdue they bring on the defensive front that could cause some troubles and could put you guys in a good spot.
Ryan, why don't you tell them about our – yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I think really the strength of Purdue's defense is the front seven. Really, the outside linebackers in Nick Scorton and Kydren Jenkins are our fast, athletic guys who can get to the quarterback when they're rushing, and then our inside or interior offensive linemen, they're pretty good at plugging holes. So last week against Virginia Tech only allowed 11 rushing yards in total. So they did a pretty good job blocking up some holes, especially since it was a downpour and you kind of tend to go to the rushing attack in those games. So definitely our strong suit. Now we'll just kind of glaze over the secondary and go from there.
I like to hear that. I don't like that the front seven would be your strength in the sense that LaQuint Allen is still kind of trying to get his feet under him this year. We saw flat in the bowl game last year, we saw him feature and look extremely good. This year, we can't really at this point tell if it's a function of Babers keeping the playbook really tight like he is want to do until a game like you guys. Or whether it's just our blocking scheme is in a situation where it's not going to give him space. We're hoping the former. You guys are probably hoping the latter. So we'll see how that one pans out. I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see him more in a, you know, chip and go swing pass type type role, kind of a late league delay type situation, which could be viable if your secondary is as happy and fun as you think it is.
Yeah, it's had some problems. It's not good when receivers are getting behind your secondary multiple times in a game.
Donovan Brown is licking his lips right
yes.
now.
Brown and Alford are very happy at this point of the pod.
Yeah, and you'll be up. I mean, you'll be also be happy to hear, and Andrew, if you took a look at my answers, that that Syracuse is actually most likely going to be without its top target receiving wise.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, Ryan was going to ask you about that. How sure is this that he's out? I mean, I don't know what the, because, you know, every school does injury reports and all that different. So I'm not sure how Syracuse handles those.
So Syracuse is one of those universities that doesn't have like a medical university attached to it, like, you know, with Pitt and UMPC or something like that. And so Syracuse hasn't been able to consult with doctors in terms of Aronde Gadsden's availability by the time that Dino Babers held his press conference. So he wasn't able to give an update on whether Gadsden would be available for this game or not.
And for those Purdue fans who are listening, what was his injury?
His injury was some sort of right ankle injury.
Okay.
His right ankle got rolled up on during one of the first possessions of last week's game.
Second play of the game, yeah.
Yes, like this, it was probably the second or third play from scrimmage for Syracuse. He was
so
helped
over Rodgers.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thankfully, it didn't look like it was that bad.
The Jets fan here is not happy.
Oh, man.
So,
I'm sorry, I knew that.
You remember you're talking to a Bills fan here, Christian.
Yes, I do.
We're even less happy.
I do realize that. Thank you for the 20 fantasy points for my Jets defense. He left the field. Gadsden left the field, was helped off the field, went to the locker room, and came back on crutches and with a boot on his ankle. So obviously he didn't play the rest of the game. This wasn't a Rodgers situation where it clearly looks like he had like a ruptured Achilles or anything. And Babers, in his initial thought, after the game, was hopeful that, or was at least hoping that he could get Gadsden back out for this game. From what we could tell, I don't think he'll play, just because Babers does like to be careful with injuries. And if he even talks about an injury, it's usually, and doesn't immediately say a guy is going to be available for the next week, it usually means that guy is not going to be available for a couple of weeks.
So
I do not think that Gadsden will be available for this game. And for the Purdue fans, you might remember Aronde because he had two touchdowns last year, including the game winner.
Quite a game.
Preseason All-American this year, son of former NFL wideout Aronde Gadsden. Go figure.
May or may not have, you know, battled with Pat Sertan at high school and really honed his craft there. So he was going to be and continues to be one of the favorite targets for Garrett Schrader. Unfortunately, he might not be available. Now, Syracuse does have options to mitigate that, namely Isaiah Jones is going to be the number one target to be the guy who replaces Gadsden. And he's kind of got a similar body type, a little less tall and a little less heavy, but has the same type of speed explosiveness and explosiveness as well. Showed some really good hops as well in the first couple of games at Syracuse. So if 50-50 battles in the air are not your secondary specialty, then, and I see that it's not, Jones might have a really good, might have a fun day.
Gotcha.
And so,
one of the questions I had for you, kind of looking at the Syracuse stat line so far, is I know you mentioned LaQuint Allen as their feature back, but they really have three running backs who are in that 17 to 25 carries range so far. Is that just a product of who they have played?
Primarily. You're going to see a little of Juwan Price, but beyond that, you're not going to see much of anything besides Allen, I would assume, once we get to the feature games in the schedule. Allen was delayed getting into camp, so it also probably is a bit of them, you know, continuing to get him up to full throttle. I got a hunch when you looked at this schedule, those first 2 weeks for Syracuse were effectively two more weeks of higher tempo game speed camp. So this is like the start of the season for a lot of what we're going to be seeing consistently, I think.
To give you guys context, Syracuse's starters only played one snap in the second half against Colgate and did not play at all in the second half against Western Michigan.
Yeah. That, like I said, with Purdue playing Indiana State last year, that sounds a lot like what happened in that game as well. It was just like, we just, everybody got to play in that game. I mean, when you go through the roster and you look at all, and they're like, appeared in one game last year. And they're like, I know exactly which game you appeared in.
Yep.
Because it's the same one that everyone else did.
It's the give the walk on to sometime on the field game.
Right.
Which never used to be a thing. Now that you don't have to burn a red shirt, where
it
comes
you get
in
four
handy.
Games. Yeah.
So let's get to the part of the pod that I think Syracuse fans want to hear, and that's about your new QB, because it's a big name QB. Because Hudson Card, you know. If you're the Texas starting QB at some point, you're going to get recognition. But now he's at Purdue, and while he's probably not the same level as AOC, there's probably some decent strengths and weaknesses that Syracuse fans have to look out for. What are those?
Yeah, I would say for the first and foremost, if you're comparing him to Aiden O'Connell, Hudson Card is much more mobile. It's staggering, but that's more so speaking to how immobile Aiden O'Connell was. Hudson Card can definitely use his legs. We actually, in the first two games, would have liked to see him use his legs a little bit more often, just because at times he would have 4 or 5 yards in front of him, but would, you know, sit back and try to make a play with his arm. Now, obviously, that's good if you have a big play coming, but getting those yardage is helpful usually. So if you have Hudson Card as the quarterback, I mean, I don't know that he has the same weapons he had at Texas. That said, he still can throw a pretty accurate ball. He's looked pretty posed in the pocket, and he can escape a pocket, like I said, with his legs. We just would like him to run a little bit more, and if he can get the ball out a little bit quicker to his receivers, it would be helpful, just because sometimes a route breaks down a little bit more. But overall, we like what we see. And we're obviously excited for that talent that Ryan Walters brought in his first year through the transfer portal. So there's still more to be desired, and we think he can give it to Purdue fans.
Yeah. The only thing I'll add is if you are trying to compare Hudson Card to Aiden O'Connell, or AOC as we call him, just because it is so much easier to type everywhere than Aiden O'Connell. Aiden O'Connell had two very, very good weapons in the receiving core at his disposal. He had Charlie Jones and he had Payne Durham. Granted, Payne Durham is tight end, but you know, he was a very active receiver in that Purdue offense last year.
We know. 424 yards later, we know.
Yeah, right. Whereas you know, Hudson Card has been without his number one tight end, and he's really struggled to find, I think, a go-to receiver at this point. Deion Burks is very, very fast. He certainly played like a number one receiver against Fresno State, but then was held to just one reception against Virginia Tech. And so he's had to spread the ball around quite a bit. So I think that has both helped and hurt this Purdue offense because they're not over-reliant on one guy like they were on Charlie Jones last year. But at the same time, if it's third, you know, it's third and six, third and seven, you got to have somebody who you can trust. You got to have somebody who you know you can get the ball to in a tight spot, who you know can fight for one or two extra yards if you get it to them behind the sticks. And I don't know that Purdue and Hudson Card really have that guy right now that they have that rapport with that they can really trust on a third and a really difficult yardage.
Nice. Well, we're about halfway through here on our time. And I know we were talking pre-show about some of our favorite things in terms of Syracuse special teams. And I know that.
Oh, Ryan, I thought you were going to try and throw a home field read in there.
Well, we could do that as well because it is halftime. We'll do that real quick and say, first of all, This Loyal Idiots is sponsored by Home Field Apparel, your one-stop shop for all your throwback Syracuse and even Purdue throwback apparel jersey. You can use the code NOONS23 at checkout for 10% off.
Connor, don't disown us for upping the Purdue side of things. I know you're he's an Indiana fan, so.
Yeah, we know.
Though they did drop some really solid stuff for you guys.
They did. They have some really good stuff.
Those are really sharp.
Yeah. I've got a couple upstairs. Nice.
All your comfiest throwback apparel, whether it's Syracuse, Purdue, or even your new conference mates in UCLA, USC, Oregon, Washington. Yes, this world is still weird. Yeah. You can use the code NOONS23 at checkout for 10% off your first order. But we love special teams here at News Tradition and as Syracuse Online people because of our love for Punter U. And I believe, Ryan, you've got some fun Punter things for us here.
Yes, I do. Okay. So I kind of explained this pre-show, and our listeners have heard this every single podcast, so they know what's going on. But for your viewers, what we like to do is we took a Sickos community post online where they had the amount of punts it took each school and their punter to get to that school's nearest Culver's.
Each Big Ten school.
Correct. Yeah, because Culver's thrives in the Midwest.
Yes. Butterburgers, frozen custard, all of the things.
I don't know what any of those things you said were.
It's a very delicious fast food chain that serves, instead of ice cream, they have frozen custard. Mm. And it's very, very good, very, very thick. And, of course, they've got the burgers that have, like, a nice butter on the buns. And it's just very good.
Yeah, I'm in.
Wisconsin finest.
Yeah, and they have, and then one of their sides is delicious cheese curds. So what's not to love?
Yeah. There we go.
Mm-hmm. We also respect that in upstate New York here.
Yes.
So the idea is that we've gone through is we want to take a certain spot in the world where it has something to do with the school we are going against. And this week it's Syracuse. So I have taken the average punting distance of your punter, Jack Stonehouse, which is 46.6 yards.
Okay.
And I will give you the amount of punts it would take Jack Stonehouse to get from Syracuse's stadium to somewhere in the world. And with that distance, you'll be able to guess where he's punting to, given his leg doesn't fall off from the amount of punts. It's usually many punts. So, it would take Jack Stonehouse 87,714 punts to get to this location. Now, obviously, that's not exactly fair. So it's over 2,000 miles.
That was about where the math just got me. So,
yeah.
Wow, that's some fast math in your head there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're right. Times 3 divided by 5. What are we doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's got to be, it's a location that is significant to Syracuse in one way or another.
Right.
I'm going to guess the New Orleans Superdome.
Nope, not quite.
I feel like that's not 2,000 miles, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a bit further than the Superdome.
Okay.
But it could be if you go eastbound and go overseas. We're not shy of going overseas on this game.
Huh. Would it be the hometown of Maximilian Meng, our tight end?
Nope, not quite. And if you guys have guesses, you can just keep shouting out. Eventually, I usually just need to give it to you.
Is it the center of campus of SMU, one of Syracuse's new ACC mates?
No, but that is an excellent guess.
That is a very good guess.
Significant to Syracuse.
Yeah, that's the part that I'm like trying to think of as well.
I'm like, I'll give my brain is like,
think of Syracuse's mascot.
So is it somewhere in Miami?
No, but you are on the correct line.
I think I might have an idea because I don't even know, but I'm not going to say it.
Hmm. 2,000 miles.
For those who are only listening, I believe Christian is Googling something to find a distance here.
I didn't look up distance because I'm not going to cheat like that. I did Google where the Mascot Hall of Fame is because Otto was just inducted this year into the Mascot Hall of Fame. But I don't think that is far enough because it's only in Indiana.
Yep.
So, okay. So you guys ready? You want me to give it to you?
Yeah.
Let
Andrew go for it.
Is it in Florida? Is it the Tropicana factory that's just outside of Tampa?
No.
Ah.
Or Tropicana.
That was a good guess.
That was honestly, so I had two responses to this, and they're the same thing essentially. So this is actually the distance to Orange County, California.
Yes.
Which weirdly ties in even more because our former editor at Noons lives in Orange County, California.
Yeah, he does.
All right. So, but the other answer would have been Orange County, Florida.
Yeah. Both of those would track, yeah.
I like it.
Awesome. Is Cal in Orange County?
I don't know, but they're about to get back in this.
They are. God.
I believe Orange County is Southern California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's some of our new Florida
conference mate. Mm-hmm. I did ask Andrew about this in our Q&A, Ryan. I'm interested to hear your thoughts because we can't have a college football or just college athletics podcast in general where we have two schools who are talking with each other before bringing up realignment in some weird shape or form, because this is the weird world we live in where Syracuse now has their men's soccer team playing Stanford at one point and your wrestling teams are now going to be taking on Oregon and Washington. So this is a weird world. But how do you feel about your new West Coast friends?
Go ahead, Andrew.
I told him in my email, but I'll say this. It's very weird. I mean, you know, the Big Ten is a Midwestern conference is how we've always known it. It was kind of weird when we added, you know, Maryland and Rutgers. It was kind of weird when we added Nebraska. So it's been weird for a little while, but now going literally coast to coast, it's just going to be bizarre, but it's one of those things. It was going to happen whether the Big Ten tried to add somebody or not. So the Big Ten really had two choices, either stand pat with the 14 they have, and say, look, this is who we are, and we're going to stay here. And ultimately, they might have been one of the next conferences to be raided if other schools or if other conferences had taken, you know, these Pac-12 teams. So now the Big Ten is stronger, which means Purdue is stronger. and they're going to be getting more money, which love it or hate it, college sports is increasingly run by money, by TV contracts. And so Purdue just made themselves incredibly more secure with, you know, depending on which account you read, an additional 30 to 50 million more per year than a lot of other conferences schools get. So while you can say tradition is ruined and, you know, we won't be playing our traditional rivals as often anymore because we've got to go to the West Coast now, ultimately Purdue is going to have more money. Purdue is going to be able to upgrade more things, be able to hopefully run a smoother athletic department. And ultimately, while you may not like the changes, they were going to happen either way. It's one of those like get on or get out of the way. And the Big Ten, you know, decided not only they were going to get on, they were going to drive the bus. So you gotta take that and run with it, I guess.
So if I was recording this podcast back in 2012, you could have just cut and pasted your audio for Syracuse going from the Big East to the ACC. And it was literally the exact same situation of, well, it's going to happen and they're going to give us more money and okay, let's go.
Yes. Right. And then the Big East died and then the Big East was reborn. Long live the Big East.
Right. That sounds about right.
And you sound like half the people in our comments section who want Syracuse to go back to the Big East.
I'm sure. I cannot imagine, like, if Purdue had, you know, for whatever reason, changed conferences, it would have just been a nightmare. I mean, people get upset in our comments when Purdue Pete gets slightly tweaked in, you know, a kid version that they put on t-shirts. And it's like, this is awful. Burn the whole department down. So,
oh,
you know,
so it's
you,
not just if, us?
No, it's okay, not just cool. You. As I said earlier, the internet undefeated. You know, change anything and you're going to hear it.
Fair yes. enough.
Now, my question is the ACC going to be renamed?
To the All Coast Conference?
Yes, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Still ACC.
Again, also, internet undefeated. I've seen that way too many times.
You got to stay consistent with the branding, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the Big Ten, even though there's going to be 18 teams.
Yeah, until it turns into the Big 20, it's going to be the Big Ten.
Do you guys put an asterisk next to the zero? And
well, of course, I mean, the famous and best usage of it was when the Big Ten added Penn State, and then they became 11, and then there was the hidden 11 in the Big Ten conference logo. And that was the best. And then, of course, you know, we ruined it by adding other teams, but.
So what happens is the Big
Ten times two.
Well, what happens is the Big Ten logo is just the IG is just going to be larger.
Yeah, well, there's also people who have turned the G into an 8.
Oh,
yep.
God. So we're the B18.
Okay.
that sounds like the next fighter. It sounds like the next fighter jet that the U.S. military is prototyping.
It's a droid or an X-Wing version, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was the name of the warhead that Luke used to blow up the Death Star.
There you go.
Sir, that was a proton torpedo.
True.
Indeed, yes. It was.
Sorry, I was so rash about that.
Yeah. I'm going to have to leave this podcast.
Well, you can jump on the podcast I host in 15 minutes. I have a nerd news podcast, like a weekly nerd recap podcast that I run. We're doing an Ahsoka episode recap in 15-20 minutes.
I haven't watched the one that came out last night yet. So
do it as soon as this is done.
That's my plan.
The internet unites a lot of things, like nerds.
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But going back to the now All Coast Conference, or ACC now, that is not just the Atlantic Coast Conference, it is also in a weird position because our co-host, Andy, and I, we're kind of united on this idea that we don't necessarily think the ACC had to add Cal, Stanford, and SMU. But what came out later, in terms of the reporting that was done, actually made the move make a lot more sense. Because when the ACC and ESPN made the ACC network, the conference created what was called a grant of rights. And it's a very tight contract that tied the teams to the ACC and kept them there until something like 2030. 2034, 2037.
Yeah, 2034.
Yeah, 2034. And if a team wanted to leave the conference and move somewhere else, they would have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to break those grant of rights. What was reported is that Clemson, FSU, and UNC were prepared to start making moves to pay that money and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so what also was announced was that if the ACC ever dropped below 15 members, then it opened up the grant of rights to be renegotiated. And right now that contract can't be renegotiated until 2030. And so by adding Cal, Stanford, and SMU, it ensures that if Clemson, FSU, and UNC do want to jump ship, the ACC will still be at 15 teams. But if that wasn't the case, I don't think the ACC really needed to, because it's not like the ACC doesn't have the same cash inflow that the Big Ten has and the Big 12 and the SEC. And so it would just make it currently is making just logistics a nightmare for the ACC.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm not looking forward to for Big Ten teams. It's going to be strange, especially we'll have to be playing, you know, Saturday night football games over in California, or, you know, in Oregon, Washington. So we'll be playing at, you know, what time? East Coast time?
Right.
Where most of the Purdue fans live. It's going to be weird.
Right. We're used to Pac-12 after dark. I didn't realize we would need Big Ten and ACC after dark, too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's realignment talk, everyone.
There you go. Yeah.
Congratulations to all of us.
Yeah. Cliff notes, none of it makes any sense, but we all had to do it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we're slowly starting to wrap up here on our Disloyal Idiots Boiler Alert duo podcast. We've definitely talked about the strengths and weaknesses of each team. Andrew, I asked you about some of the unsung heroes. I want to hear some from Ryan as well. But Andrew, why don't you start first and tell me who your unsung heroes on both sides of the ball that Syracuse fans should be looking out for as like kind of those sneaky guys that you wouldn't think of.
So I think for me, I listed an offensive lineman as an unsung hero for Purdue.
Steve will be very happy.
And a lineman who hasn't even played this year because he's been out with injury. So I put Gus Hartwig. He's the starting center for Purdue, but he's been out the last 2 weeks. And I think without him, you've really seen a difference in the offensive line. And that shows kind of what an unsung hero he has been for this Purdue team. He's been so stable throughout his career at Purdue. He has done a really great job at the center position, which is obviously a very important position on the offensive line and on the offense as a whole. And being without him has just showed his value. So he is the guy who I listed on the offensive side. And then defense, I put someone who Ryan mentioned already, and that's Kydren Jenkins, because he's a linebacker on Purdue, outside linebacker. And he doesn't get the same amount of publicity, I think, as a guy like Nick Scorton does. But I think he's really come into his own this season. I think he has made a big improvement from last year. And I think as the season goes on, he's going to be someone you're going to hear more and more about.
Yeah, absolutely. So on my end, so offensively, an unsung hero, I'm kind of going to go with one of the second or third options at wide receiver, and that is Abdur-Rahman Yassin. So he is very consistent. He's not always the top threat that people game plan for, but he can still give you four catches, you know, get downfield, make the right moves. The problem he's had over his career is injuries. So that's sort of held him back a little bit. But when he's on the field and when he's healthy, he's very consistent and makes a contribution to the offense that helps you win. On the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to go with a freshman. And I'm going to say he's unsung just because of how young he is so far. It is Dylan Thieneman. Both his brothers play for Purdue. He is the third Thieneman to play. And he has led the entire Purdue defense in tackling. He leads the Purdue defense in interceptions with two. And he's just made some big hits and some serious plays for a guy who's 18, 19 years old. He looks to have a very bright future as his brothers did at Purdue.
Yeah, he was the other guy I was going to mention on defense, but I wasn't sure how unsung he was since he's getting so much publicity, just being like a true freshman playing and getting two interceptions so far through two games. But I think he's the other answer that makes a lot of sense to me.
Fair enough.
We know in Syracuse that when if a legacy player does pretty well, you know, the fan base is probably going to latch onto them.
Yeah.
Be one.
Buddy. Yeah. Love to see that last name that you recognize, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see one Buddy Jackson Thomas Boeheim on the good old basketball side.
Well, I think there's about six Boeheims on that team at one point, right?
Blood or non. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Blood or non. Yeah. Yeah. So I know, Steve, I know you've got to get into another podcast here shortly. Do you guys have any more questions for us? Because I think Ryan and I were hoping to end just with some predictions, and I don't want to keep you here longer than you need to so you miss your other podcast.
Oh, no, let's jump right into it.
Sure.
All right. Do we want to go one and one? So one of you guys and then one of us, and we'll go back and forth.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Christian, you want to lead off since you've already been alluded to as the surprise
yes,
of the...
Yes, I will lead off. As Andrew said, I am predicting an 18-point win for Syracuse. It is 34-16. Yes, this is out of character for me, but like I said, I think it's the defense that carries this. And yes, I know that the defense has only played FCS Colgate and bottom-of-the-barrel MAC Western Michigan. But just through the eye test alone, this defense looks better than when the past iterations of this Syracuse defense has played against similar competition. And most of the contributors that we're seeing in this defense are veteran guys who are back and are really hungry. The main focal point is going to be Marlo Wax, who is sliding over from the weak side linebacker to middle linebacker. And he is still playing with basically his head cut off and rushing the A-gap like no tomorrow. The free safety, Elijah Clark, is going to get his head involved in every play no matter what. And the quarterbacks, who may have been a concern after both of our starting quarterbacks last year left due to graduation and the transfer portal, both of the starting quarterbacks this year have stepped up and played tight coverage in Isaiah Johnson and Jeremiah Wilson. If the run defense can hold, and if Devin Mockerby regresses to the form that he showed against Syracuse, I don't think points are going to be easy to come by for Purdue. And that gives me a lot of confidence to say that the Syracuse defense will lead the Orange to a victory.
And that's a forced regression of Devin Mockerby, not like him just magically not playing well.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Ryan, do you want to go for us?
Yeah, I will go. So the one X factor I think in this game is actually just surely the location. We hadn't really talked about it. I know your kicker has not missed a single kick this year, but when you're playing in a dome, it's a little bit easier. But I think Purdue at night presents just a whole new environment. Kind of the blackout and West Lafayette at nighttime. They've been some big games there. I've got Purdue in this one 31-24 just because I liked the effort we saw from the defense last week as opposed to in week one. I think they're on the right path. The offense is getting healthier, and if Devin Mockerby can make that extra effort against a defensive line that has some issues, I think that bodes well for Purdue. So 31-24 Purdue.
Okay. I might almost flip that on its head and go like 27-21 or something. I'll end up putting it on paper tomorrow when we publish the article, but something in the vein of like a one possession Syracuse win. I don't think this is going to be the stupid game. I think this is going to be a much more palatable game to watch. I think both teams have pluses and minuses that each other can exploit. I do think Syracuse will end up coming out on top just between how Schrader has changed his game as far as actually looking downfield to receivers instead of just tucking and running immediately, as well as, like Christian said, the defense. You guys understand the how we watch a game versus how most people would look at a game, and they're passing the look test more so than they have in years past. So probably a one possession game, Syracuse victory is where I'll settle.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was really surprised when we hopped on here that you guys said that Christian was the pessimistic one.
Yeah, normally he's so, completely the pessimist.
To give you an idea, in our preseason predictions for overall record, everyone kind of went with 8-4, 7-5 records for Syracuse. I went with a 6-6 and almost put down 5-7.
Okay. All right. So they've convinced you. You're converted.
Because like Steve said, because like Steve said, the Syracuse team is passing the eye test a lot better than it has in previous seasons.
Gotcha. So I am last. I'm going to go 35-31 Purdue. As everyone here has said, I think both teams have flaws, and I think it's ultimately going to come down to which team can exploit that flaw. I know Christian and Steve, you both said that you're a little concerned about the Syracuse offensive line, as well as not knowing fully who is actually going to be on that offensive line. You're hoping to have some guys back. And I think the Purdue defensive line can really take advantage of that. I think they've done a good job so far this year, and I hope that that will mask some of the problems of the Purdue secondary, preventing the quarterback from having a lot of time, preventing those plays from developing, maybe make them a little bit more one-dimensional. So that would be great news for Purdue. And also, I do think the hopeful return of Gus Hartwig will make a difference, allow Devin Mockaby to really have a much better game than he did last year against Syracuse. And overall, I think, to Ryan's point, playing the game at Ross-Ade at night, you just see a trail of top 10 teams that have gone into Ross-Ade at night and lost over the last few years. And I think it is a sneaky, difficult place to play at night. So if this game was at Syracuse, I would feel differently. But since it is at home in Ross-Ade, I'm going to go Purdue pulls out a 35-31 victory.
Well, it promises to be a good game. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that we've all predicted a good game, it's going to be a complete shit show. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a 4-turnover, yeah. 2 safeties, missed field goals. It's going to be everything.
Oh, so a Syracuse
game. And yeah. And as weirdly has been the theme of this joint podcast, if that happens, the internet wins.
Yeah.
There you go.
We're here for the sickos, man. We're here for the sickos.
Perfect ending.
We are here for the sickos at Sickos Committee. We love you and endear you as always. Well, that will do it for this joint episode between the Disloyal Idiots and Boiler Alert here on the Fans First Sports Network. Andrew and Ryan, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today.
Hey, thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.